This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Jim Bertel. The White House coronavirus advisor, Deborah Birx, is warning the U.S. has entered a new phase of the pandemic. Lisa Bernard reports.
A top U.S. health official on Sunday warned that the country is in a new phase of the novel coronavirus outbreak, with infections, quote, extraordinarily widespread in rural areas as well as big cities. Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House Coronavirus Task Force coordinator, told CNN's State of the Union, quote, what we are seeing today is different from March and April. It is extraordinarily widespread. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on Sunday she does not have confidence in Birx, linking her to disinformation spread by President Trump. Pelosi told ABC's This Week, quote, I think the president has been spreading disinformation about the virus and she is his appointee, so I don't have confidence there, no. The coronavirus has infected 4.6 million people in the U.S. and killed more than 155,000 Americans, according to a Reuters tally.
That is Reuters' Lisa Bernard reporting. The White House and top congressional Democrats remain at odds over the scope of more assistance for 30 million American workers left unemployed by the coronavirus pandemic. In an interview with ABC's This Week, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says there are a number of elements to a larger deal keeping the sides from agreement.
I think on the concept, we absolutely agree on enhanced unemployment. We want to fix the where in some cases people are overpaid and we want to make sure there's the right incentives. But again, let me just emphasize, we put on the table a proposal. Let's extend it for 1 week at the same rate while we negotiate so we don't hurt the American public.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says there are still some major sticking points.
We are making progress. We had a three-hour discussion on the issues. Today our staffs are meeting to work out some of those details on the issues. We will meet again tomorrow.
Principals and weekend meetings between the Trump administration and congressional Democratic leaders on a new COVID-19 relief bill are calling the sessions productive. Both sides agree they are a long way from an agreement. With a vaccine expected by the end of the year, the question everyone is asking is, who will be the first in line for the vaccine, and how would it be rationed? Health officials hope to have some draft guidance by late next month. AP's Julie Walker reports.
Dr. Francis Collins, the director of the National Institutes of Health, admitted during the first meeting recently of a group of experts tasked with figuring that out that it's a vexing decision.
This is going to be controversial. Not everybody's going to like the answer. There will be many people who feel that they should have been at the top of the list. And not everybody can be.
Traditionally, first in line are health workers and the vulnerable, but Collins tossed new ideas into the mix, like where the outbreak is hitting hardest and vaccine trial volunteers.
Probably we owe them as a consequence of their participation in the trial.
Final tests of two vaccines are already underway in the U.S. and a couple more are coming up, with lots of others happening around the world. I'm Julie Walker.
America crewed spaceship to fly to the International Space Station in nearly a decade returned safely to Earth on Sunday, splashing down in the Gulf of Mexico. The successful mission, carried out jointly by SpaceX and NASA, demonstrated that the United States has the capacity once more to send its astronauts to space and bring them back. Astronaut Doug Hurley.
You know, this has been a quite an odyssey the last five, six, seven, 8 years, 5 years since Bob and I started working on this program, and to be where we are now, the first crewed flight of Dragon is just unbelievable.
A visibly excited SpaceX founder, Elon Musk, added the mission heralded a new era.
You know, there's not that much good. And I think this is one of those things that is universally good. No matter where you are on planet Earth, this is a good thing.
The next manned SpaceX mission to the International Space Station is scheduled for September. For more on any of today's latest news, please go to voanews.com or use the VOA mobile app. In Washington, via remote, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. Today is Monday, August 3rd. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in this week for James Butte. We have a great show for you lined up, so do not reduce the volume. Here are the stories we are covering. Anti-government protests are planned for today in Mali.
This is happening in a time when the government is really enabled to secure its border.
That was VOA's Modibo Dembélé in Bamako, Mali. Also ahead, Cameroonian mental health workers protest against abusive practices by traditional healers. Why hundreds of elephants have died in Botswana, a Tunisian man is breaking gender barriers, and the latest in Malawi's fight against COVID-19.
We have managed to get about 700 healthcare workers just to try to manage to bridge the gap. It is not enough, but we have to start from somewhere.
That was Malawi Health Minister Kumbize Chiponda. All those stories, plus Samson Omale's sports and a tribute to a Malian guitarist and griot, are next on Daybreak Africa. Our top story today is in Mali, where opposition members and activists have planned to hold protests today in Bamako, demanding the president step down. The opposition, called M5RPF, has staged mass demonstrations for months, but paused for the Muslim Eid al-Adha festival over the weekend. In recent weeks, West African leaders have tried to solve Mali's crisis by recommending the formation of a government of national unity, but the leaders stopped short of calling for Keita's resignation. Neither the opposition nor sitting lawmakers accepted the proposal, and now the opposition has vowed to go back to the streets. For the latest from Bamako, here's VOA's Modibo Dembélé.
The atmosphere seemed to be normal, even though you can see some military car parked in some street intersection. You can see some National Guard car parked at the intersection of the street. However, they are not bothering anybody.
Has the president of Mali made any statements about these planned protests?
The only statement that the president of Mali has made, that was a few days ago during the Muslim holiday celebration. The president stated that the Mali government will make sure people can move freely in the country, and which means the government is not going to be sitting down watching people blocking the main street or areas of the country in the name of the civil disobedience, which most likely is a prep work to counter protest. The statement from the president of Mali shows clearly that the chance that a clash might happen between security forces and the M5 people.
Now, are shops and markets and malls open, or have people closed down their businesses in preparation for the protests?
As of now, I have not seen any shop or mall or businesses close ahead of this protest. However, people keep talking about this because everybody hear what the president addressed. So people expect that the chance that a clash might happen between security forces and M5 is very higher.
And last of all, can you explain what's the wider context in which this crisis in Mali is taking place?
This is happening in a time when the government is really enabled to secure its border. We know as of now, Kidal, a city located to the extreme north of Mali, and also Mopti, which is a city located in the north, Segu, which is also a little bit to the center of Mali, all those areas are today among the red spots of Mali due to the extreme insecurity which is going on in those areas. And to be very clear and simple, the main implication of this political crisis is really to weaken the government ability to exercise its right, which is to govern. But at the same time, is an occasion also to the citizens, especially the people from the M5 RFP, to really end, according to them, corruption, nepotism, which has been going on in the country for many, many years.
That was VOA's Modibo Dembele in Bamako, Mali. Daybreak Africa will continue its on-the-ground coverage of Mali's political crisis. In Cameroon, seven prominent mental health charities protested this weekend in the capital, Yaoundé. The charities are speaking out against harsh treatment of people with mental illness by traditional healers. Psychiatric patients in Cameroon are often tortured by traditional healers who believe that mental illness is divine punishment for wrongdoing. Saturday's protests were provoked by the chaining, detention, and torture for close to a week of a man believed to have epilepsy, a condition which frequently leads to memory loss. Journalist Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Dozens of people are visiting the police post at Mokolo, a neighborhood in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, to listen to the predicament of 24-year-old Junior Lawan. Lawan says he is not a madman, as his family claims. He says when he had a series of epileptic seizures 4 years ago, his parents said he was a fool and stopped him from going to college. He says he finds it very difficult convincing his family and friends that he temporarily suffers from memory loss, but that he insists that he is not a fool, as they claim. Lawan said after 3 years of hardship, he escaped from the home of a healer in the town of Ntui, about 80 kilometers north of Yaoundé. He said while there, he was forced to look into the sun for 3 minutes every day as a form of healing. He was beaten and given some concoctions to drink in what the healer said was cleansing from evil spirits. Unfortunately, Lawan said he did not find peace at the Yaoundé residence of his older brother, Jedone Sadi. Sadi says he did not want his brother, who he knows is under an evil spell for wrongdoing, to live with him. He says he asked his neighbors to chain Lawan on his feet and hands to stop him from destroying the roof of his house. He says Lawan escaped from a healer's care because Lawan is not only mad, but possessed by evil spirits. He says he intends to take Lawan to exorcist priest for deliverance. Lawan told the police, where he was taken for safety, that he struggled to escape through the roof because of the pain from beatings. His story spread like wildfire and on social media platforms, attracting the attention of mental health charity groups. Dr. Chaut Leonga Karim Charles, who treats psychiatric patients in Yaoundé, says the charities went out to the streets of Yaoundé to inform people that mental illness can be treated at hospitals. He says the burden of families who find it difficult to take care of mental patients will be reduced if they simply take them to psychiatric hospitals.
It will reduce the stigma, the pain, and the harm caused on these patients, like stigmatizing and insulting them on their predicament, giving them over to traditional healers where they are abandoned to themselves and left at the mercies of these healers, where people suggest sex as a channel of healing because they consider these diseases to be spiritual, or at worst, they are even abandoned on the streets.
Leonga said causes of mental illness include increasing drug misuse and economic hardship. Traditionally, it is believed generational curses, God's punishment for wrongdoing and witchcraft or spiritual possession are responsible for the illness. Cameroon's government adds that trauma from the 4-year separatist crisis in English-speaking regions and stress from Boko Haram terrorism in northern Cameroon increased mental illness in the Central African state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Also in Cameroon, suspected militants from the Islamist Boko Haram group killed at least 16 people and wounded 7 early on Sunday in a grenade attack on a camp for displaced people. District Mayor Mijewa Bukar told Reuters that the assailants threw a grenade into a group of sleeping people inside the camp in the village of Ingwechewe near the Nigerian border. Bukar said women and children were among the dead in the camp, which is home to around 800 people. Boko Haram has been fighting for a decade to carve out an Islamic caliphate in Nigeria. The conflict there, which has killed an estimated 30,000 people and displaced millions, has frequently spilled over into neighboring Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. In Botswana, hundreds of elephants have mysteriously died in recent months. Now, a senior wildlife official says a naturally occurring toxin may be to blame. Edward Barron of Reuters reports.
Hundreds of mysterious elephant deaths in Botswana were probably caused by a naturally occurring toxin, a senior wildlife official told Reuters. Cyril Taulo, the acting director of the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, said preliminary tests show it's highly unlikely an infectious disease killed at least 281 elephants. Officials have been struggling to establish the cause of death more than 2 months after the first carcasses were spotted in the Okavango Panhandle region. Initial investigations appeared to rule out common causes like poaching and anthrax. The government has sent samples to laboratories in Botswana, South Africa, Zimbabwe, and the United States for tests. The elephant deaths have concerned some conservationists, who fear deaths could spiral out of control if a cause cannot be established quickly. Africa's overall elephant population is declining due to poaching, but Botswana, home to almost a third of the continent's elephants, has seen numbers grow to around 130,000.
Thanks to Edward Barron of Reuters for that report. Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera has announced the introduction of a special award for the most dedicated health workers in the fight against COVID-19. Speaking during his weekly national address Saturday night, Chakwera said 5 health workers nominated by various medical associations will receive the award every 3 months for their dedication to their work. But some health workers say awarding only 5 people is not enough. Journalist Lamek Masino reports from Blantyre.
Malawi continues to register an increase in the cases of COVID-19. The coronavirus situation update report from the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 shows as of the Saturday evening, Malawi had 4,186 cases of COVID with 20 deaths. The report also said about 100 new cases are being confirmed every day, whose transmission is now almost entirely local. However, President Chakwera said despite the spike in confirmed COVID-19 cases, nearly half of those found with the virus have already recovered fully. He says this is largely a credit to our healthcare workers who have bravely put themselves at risk to test hundreds of people every day, giving quarantine guidelines to those who are found positive and providing care to those in need of hospitalization. Chakwera described the health workers as champions who are sacrificing their lives against many odds, including depressing working conditions, depleted medical supplies, and deteriorating health facilities. He says without them, we would simply have no chance and no hope against this pandemic because they are truly our last line of defense. Chakwera introduced the Zikomo Presidential Award as a token of thanks to the most dedicated healthcare workers. Health workers say they appreciate the gesture, but say awarding only 5 health workers is not a good idea. Shouts Meza is the chairperson for Human Resource for Health Coalition. He told VOA via telephone that currently every health worker is working hard to the extent that some are even getting infected with the coronavirus. Statistics show that about 350 health workers have so far tested COVID-19 positive in Malawi with one death.
Probably the award, in my view, and representing all health workers in Malawi, there should be a universal standard award to all health workers. And I would propose, if you like, that maybe the award would be a temporary waiver of tax on salaries for health workers.
Smeza says besides awards, the government should also consider addressing the shortage of medical workers in public hospitals, which is affecting the fight against the spread of coronavirus. Health Minister Khumbize Tshibonda says the government is addressing that.
We are trying very hard. We have managed to get about 700 health workers, different cadres, nurses, clinicians, medical assistants, health surveillance assistants, just to try to manage to bridge the gap. It is not enough, but we have to start from somewhere.
President Chakwera has asked Malawians to observe preventive measures against the pandemic, which include social distancing, wearing face coverings, and regular hand washing, as the country works to formulate laws to enforce these measures. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
In other COVID news, Kenya's national airline, Kenya Airways, resumed international flights on Saturday, heading to about 30 destinations for the first time since the routes were suspended in March due to the coronavirus outbreak. Kenya Airways resumed domestic flights in mid-July after the government cleared local air travel. The airline's CEO, Alan Kilavuka, said during a ceremony ahead of a flight to London that the airline is expected to remain below 50% capacity, but it would increase flight frequencies depending on demand. He said the airline is calling 2020 a lost year. The COVID-19 pandemic has depressed the global aviation industry, with African carriers alone expected to lose about $6 billion in revenue. Next, we go to Tunisia, where one man says he is defying gender roles by taking up the art of belly dancing. VOA's Ayan Bior, with reporting from Reuters, has more.
Ashraf El Abed is a dancer, but not just any type of dancer. He's a belly dancer, a career that is usually more popular with women. Belly dancing has a long history in Tunisia. It's defined by skilled movements of the torso and garments adorned with shiny ornaments. For his performances, El Abed wears silver jewelry and makeup around his eyes.
I started dancing when I was very young. Like any other little boy, they would put me in the center of a party at home, wrap a cloth around my waist, and ask me to belly dance. They would tell me to dance as everyone clapped and ululated. When I got older, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, they told me I couldn't dance like that anymore. When I asked why, they said that men are not allowed to belly dance.
El Abed's decision to pursue his passion has led to estrangement from his family, and he has even received death threats.
Just like there are many people that hate me, there are a lot of people who love me. Many times people would stop me and say, "You're cool, you're attractive, what you perform is heritage." They would say, "Teach me," and many other things.
But he says that won't deter him from his passion.
I've grown older and now I have my own beliefs, things that I love, things that I believe in. I will complete my path. I will not stop and I will not give up. I will do my job because this is my source of income.
With reporting from Reuters, I'm Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
It's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jason. We begin the sports in Egypt, where the Interim Normalization Committee that manages the Egyptian Football Association has gotten an approval from World Governing Body FIFA to extend its stay for another 4 months to carry out its pending tasks. The committee's mandate was due to expire at the end of July, but the EFA was granted an exception from
from FIFA due to the implications of the coronavirus pandemic, which led to a five-month football hiatus in the country. A committee led by former Zamalek board member Amir El-Ghanani was appointed after Hani Abu Rida's resignation, along with the remainder of the board members back in August 2019. The committee's main goal is to run the EFA's daily affairs to ensure that the EFA's regulations comply with the ones implemented by FIFA and organize new EFA elections where there will be the electoral committee. Staying with football news, the Confederation of African Football last month announced that the 2020 Women's African Cup of Nations, slated for November 23rd to December 20th, had been cancelled as a result of COVID-19. CAF National Women Team Coach of the Year and South African National Women's Coach Desiree Ellis has shifted her frustration into excitement with the prospect of a team from South Africa playing in the CAF Champions League.
Look, I'm very excited with the CAF women's football strategy with more competitions. It's really exciting that they're looking at that avenue, not just competitions, but for coaches as well. You know, with the Champions League coming on board now, it allows countries on the continent to now get their house in order. It allows countries on the continent to make sure that their leagues are up and running, because playing in the Champions League is really huge. And which country doesn't want to be represented in the Champions League?
Away from football now, the International Chess Federation says teams from 163 countries are participating in the first online chess Olympiad. The online event began on July 24th and will run until August the 30th. The event was scheduled in response to the postponement of its traditional chess Olympiad, which had been due to take place in Moscow and Hati Manisik in August. Mehul Guhil, Kenya's national chess champion, and Naya Gosrani, another Kenyan national chess player, says the virtual competition has its own limitations.
With online, you lose that aspect of the psychology, you know, and sometimes you're not missing the opponent right in front of you. So there's a sort of loss of adrenaline, I would say.
Internet can, like, mess up, or, like, someone's computer could lag, or just anything, so it would make it like easier to have something go wrong than like when you're face to face.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jason, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. We look forward to your next report on Friday. Great Malian griots, Umana Diarra, passed away last week. Diarra played the kora, ngoni, guitar, and other instruments. His website described the late musician as a, quote, musical messenger who liked listening rather than talking and heard and saw without judgment, end quote. Diarra was born in 1960 and started playing music at age 4 using a homemade guitar built out of an empty tin can and a fishing line, his website said. Diarra went on to record and tour around the world with several of Mali's top acts over his decades-long career. In 2012, he was on one such tour in the United States when he came by the Voice of America studios in Washington, D.C. for a performance. He played guitar during that session, including on the composition you're hearing now called Imiyi, which was written by Cote d'Ivoire musician Manu Gallo. VOA's Music Time in Africa host Heather Maxwell, who interviewed Diarra during that session, describes him as a, quote, master of strings, end quote. That's it for this Monday, August 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of managing editor James Butte, producer Nicole Beckford, and the rest of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great day.
Host of Straight Talk Africa.
on the next Straight Talk Africa. The Black Lives Matter movement in the United States has resonated with Africans and ignited protests to end police brutality. Join me, Vincent McCorry, as I host a special edition of Straight Talk Africa and explore Black Lives Matter and Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.